Cardinal Wolsey's reputation as a statesman is something that's been considerably reassessed in the last 30 or 40 years. In the 1960s or 70s, the most widely held view would probably have been summed up in Geoffrey Elton's expression that Wolsey, as a statesman, was characterised by moderately inspired amateurishness. Here was someone who was quite good at running things in a rather medieval way, but really didn't have the skills or the vision of Thomas Cromwell, or Elton would have said, the modernity of Thomas Cromwell. But since then, historians have started to fit the development of government under Henry VIII into longer-term patterns, and in particular they would fit Wolsey's ministry into the revival in the strength of royal government, starting under the Yorkist kings and moving through, certainly through Cromwell's ministry, to the mid-Tudors and in some ways even Elizabeth's reign. So if we try to set Wolsey's ministry in those contexts, then his importance, the impact of his ministry, becomes clearer, but becomes inevitably more complicated. So first of all, let's look at the church. Wolsey's legatine powers, his powers granted to him by the Pope, were things which were not only of use to him, they were also of use to the king. And one could see them as the most effective means for Henry VIII to manage the church in the way in which Henry VII and previous kings had aspired to do. That's a management which aims at keeping the church under royal control, but also at offering royal leadership in reforming movements. So Wolsey uses those powers to push reform on the monasteries. He uses those powers to encourage education and the education of the clergy. He uses those powers to oppose heresy, and Wolsey's involved in campaigns of preaching against English Lutheranism, campaigns to suppress Tyndale's Lutheran translation of the Bible, and so on. And indeed, Wolsey's involved personally in dealing with a number of young scholars who were attracted to Lutheran ideas and trying to talk them out of it. His powers over the church are also used to regulate the boundaries between the behaviour of churchmen and the English common law, particularly over issues like sanctuary and benefit of clergy, the right of churchmen who committed crimes not to be tried in the ordinary royal courts. And Wolsey negotiated quite effectively on those issues, but in some ways he was caught between the privileges that the wider European church claimed, and that individual clergymen in England claimed, and the powers of the monarchy, which he was bound to represent as the king's minister, and indeed as the king's chief legal officer, as Lord Chancellor. So we can fit Wolsey's power over the church into a long perspective in which the English rulers wanted to keep control over the church. That didn't necessarily mean depriving the Pope of any role in England, but it meant making sure that what happened in the English church suited the English king. And Wolsey was an effective way to achieve that. If we look at Wolsey's impact on government, then we can fit him in a long perspective in the same way. So Wolsey was very committed to the effective provision of justice, as for example Henry VII had been before him. Wolsey's activity in the Court of Chancery as Lord Chancellor, where he sat personally as a judge, was very vigorous, and the business of the Court of Chancery increased during his time as Chancellor. He's also very active in the Court of Star Chamber, and in setting up what becomes later, after his time, the Court of Requests. So all these are courts which are faster than the ordinary common law courts, they're more effective, and they bring to bear, particularly on powerful people who might abuse the law or ignore the normal sanctions of the legal system, the power of the king's leading counsellors. Because in the Star Chamber, if you're called up before it, you don't only face Wolsey sat in the middle, you face a number of the king's other leading counsellors sitting around him. And you have to have considerable brass neck to defy a court which consists of such powerful people. And even if you did, the sanctions those courts bring to bear involve being put in massive, sometimes crippling debt to the king, so you have to obey their sanctions, otherwise you're financially ruined. So that makes these courts very effective. There are other ways too in which Wolsey tries to provide better justice by elaborating the regional councils, the Council of the North and the Council in the Marches of Wales in 1525, by pulling together the efforts of the Justices of the Peace in doing local justice, calling meetings of justices of the peace in the Star Chamber and lecturing them on the government's headline policies on justice and so on. So Wolsey, deeply committed to doing justice and apparently pretty effective. A second great area of Crown activity is finance. And here too, Wolsey put considerable effort into making things work effectively. In 1515, he was behind an Act of Resumption passed in Parliament, which tried to call back in a number of the appointments to lucrative jobs and grants of Crown lands, which Henry VIII had made earlier in his reign, in the attempt to re-stabilise the Crown lands as a great source of revenue for the king, which they'd been under Henry VII, but which Henry VIII's early grants generosity had rather weakened. More crucially still, Wolsey was very active in making the taxation system more effective, particularly through what's called the lay subsidy, a kind of directly assessed taxation, so taxation which levied money on people as a percentage of their real wealth or their real income, and in that sense, a real advance on the frozen quota-based tax system which the Tudors had inherited from the 14th and 15th centuries. So from a system where every village in England pays a certain amount fixed in the 1330s, you suddenly move to a system where each individual pays an amount directly assessed in proportion to how wealthy they really were. And that greatly increased the income of Crown taxation voted by Parliament. And Wolsey tried to go beyond parliamentary taxation too, with the forced loan, with the amicable grant, and he taxed the clergy very hard, anticipating in many ways the harsh taxation on the clergy that would be levied from the 1530s. So these were steps forward in funding Tudor government. You could say that Wolsey has an impact on the military strength of the state too, with the general proscription of 1522, a great survey of the country's military resources, and the navy, which had been built up by Henry VII and early in Henry VIII's reign, continued to develop in strength under Wolsey's management. And the last area of government policy that we might see Wolsey having a major impact on is social policy. His great enclosure inquiries of 1517 to 18, investigating what many people thought was the greatest social problem of the age, the conversion of land from the growing of grain for bread to pasture for sheep farming or keeping cattle for meat and for dairy products. And that's a survey which didn't just gather lots of information about land that had changed its use, but also took a lot of action afterwards to try to enforce changing the use of that land back. So this was a social policy that had real bite. Similarly, in 1528, when there was a famine, Wolsey organised surveys of the grain stocks in people's barns so that people couldn't stockpile grain and then profiteer and exploit other people's need. And likewise, in 1528, with the interruption to the cloth trade with the Netherlands, Wolsey ordered that employers, cloth-making employers, should keep their cloth workers working so that, although there was an interruption to the trade, there wouldn't be large crowds of unemployed people with no work, with no income, and from the point of view of the government, with every incentive to cause trouble. And those policies for regulating grain supply and for keeping the cloth industry going, even at difficult times for the export trade, they were followed by every Tudor government from Wolsey onwards. And there are other lines too of Tudor social policy that he initiated, policy to regulate the spread of plague, policy to keep vagrants under tighter control. These were all things that characterised the Tudor state as it carried on developing. So in many different areas of government, Wolsey was building on Henry VII's policy. That, of course, shouldn't surprise us at all. Wolsey had started his government service as a chaplain to Henry VII, and around him on Henry VIII's council were people who had been Henry VII's leading councillors, people like Bishop Richard Fox, Sir Thomas Lovell, even Archbishop Warham, although he and Wolsey didn't always get along. But also, we shouldn't be surprised that what Wolsey did paved the way for things that happened in the 1530s and afterwards. First of all, that's again true in personal terms. Thomas Cromwell learnt his trade working for Wolsey in the 1520s. But equally, many of the things that we think of as most characteristic of the great increase in the power of the English state from the 1530s onwards were in some ways building on what Wolsey had done. Henry VIII's takeover of the church in some ways took the machinery that Wolsey had set up as papal legate to control the English church and then turned it even more directly to the king's own aims and under the king's own control. His financial exploitation of the church was based on what Wolsey had done. His financial successes were based, yes, on the dissolution of the monasteries, although, of course, that followed Wolsey's model where he dissolved monasteries in order to found his college in Oxford, but also on the taxation system which Wolsey had helped to perfect in the 1510s and 1520s. And even the social policy of the Tudor state heading towards the great poor laws of the 1590s, which would form the basis for English government reaction to poverty and social change right through to the 19th century, even those we can see to have their origins in Wolsey's very practical responses to the problems that he faced serving as Henry VIII's chief minister.